Tam sapitam yena bhutale svayam upakaramayam dadati svapadati. Come. You have to move it up further. In front of the speaker, yeah. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yata Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sri Cha. It's too loud, I think. It's too loud. Sri Rupam Sagajatam Sagana Ravnatam Vitam Tam Sujivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purushana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Parinitam Hey Krishna Krishna Sindhu Dhyamanda Jayatvate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vaita Gadadhar Sri Vasani Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. Where's that clock? I hear a clock. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we're discussing Sadhu Sangha. Bhajan Rahasya. We mentioned, we're discussing a few verses where Bhaktivinoda Thakura was explaining different aspects of Sadhu Sangha. And then we left off in verse text 20. We were talking about not to judge devotees. Judge not lest ye be judged. In this particular verse, in one edition of Bhajan Rahasyam, that we mentioned this verse from Upadeshamrita, that when we talked about the story of Ashtavakra Muni, he was deformed, bent in eight places, and people would laugh at him. So we may see it. We should not judge a book by its cover, as they say. We have to read the book, so we should not judge a devotee by his external. That's very too much loud. We should not judge a devotee by his external appearances. Even if we see some physical defects in a devotee, we should overlook them. Of course, in India, people are very much absorbed in externals. So if they meet a Western person dressed as a Vaishnava, they say, "Oh, that's very nice. Maybe your next life you can take birth in India. Next life you can take birth in India and then you can have a chance to be a devotee." When Prabhupada was told that by Achyutananda, Prabhupada said, "Yes, next time you meet these smarta Brahmins, you should tell them that yes, if you're a very good smarta Brahmin and behave yourself very well, next life you'll be born in America. And you can join ISKCON." If you're a very fortunate Brahmin. Because practically speaking, in many cases, the devotees, all of us sitting here, were living last life in India. Especially the ones that are living full time here. living here, and maybe even as Brahmins. But we became a little proud, so then Krishna arranged for us to cut down our pride. He made a nice arrangement. Krishna always makes nice arrangements to cut down devotees' pride. And of course that's going to lead us up to the next third verse. But in this text 20, there's one bhajan from Sharanagati. That's the brief part that's quoted in one commentary on the Bhajan Rahasyam. Bhaktivinoda Thakura is saying, in relation to the devotees, how we should see the devotees rather than saying, "Oh, he's an American devotee, he's a French devotee, or he's big, small, ugly, handsome, beautiful, whatever." He's saying, "Oh Lord, your devotees are an aspect of your divine glory. May they give me their blessings for that will keep me moving in your direction, and then I will attain the shelter of your lotus feet. This is an excerpt, I don't know exactly which song, but it's from, Sharanagati is a group of songs of different titles by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is from that group. Oh my Lord, so this is a way to see, devotees are an aspect of the divine glory of Krishna. It's a very, very loving viewpoint. That each devotee is, it's not a French devotee, a South Indian devotee, Sindhi, Bindi, Hindi, whatever. The devotee is he's an aspect of your divine glory. Very nice, beautiful. Beautiful way of thinking. Beautiful way of seeing. Oh Lord, your devotees are an aspect of your divine glory. May they, the devotees, give me their blessings, for that will keep me moving in your direction. And then I will attain the shelter of your lotus feet. So in this text, verse 36, he also describes, Bhaktivinoda also describes about Sadhu Sangha, where he's saying we should strive. The title of this verse is Striving for Genuine Association. How bhakti gradually develops through the association of genuine sadhus is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 25th verse, text 25. Because here it's saying, this verse explains the results of good association and the sequence. This is the teachings of Kapila Dev. Famous verse. Satam prasangan mama virya samvidho bhavantirit karna rasayana kata tajoshanadash vapavargavartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramish. Translation. In the association of pure devotees, there are powerful discussions that illuminate my heroic deeds and that are pleasing to both the ears and the heart. Rit Karna Rasayana. By hearing these narrations, one quickly proceeds along the path of the removal of ignorance, avidya nivritti, which is the sequential development of Shraddha, Rati, and Prema Bhakti. The verse says, Shraddha, Rati, Bhakti, Anu, Kramishiti. Krama means sequence, or following. Anu means following one after the other. By associating with elevated devotees, one attains faith, then he becomes attached to Krishna, Rati, and then that attachment grows more and more to become Bhakti. And this case, bhakti refers to prema bhakti. In the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada has a very nice purport. In one sentence he says, association with devotees means associating with the Lord. Everyone says, I want to see Krishna. I want to see God. You want to see God? See the devotee. God himself is a devotee. God is a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the devotee. And then Krishna expands himself as the ideal devotee, Radharani. So Radharani, if you see Radharani, you're also seeing devotee. The greatest devotee, with the greatest love and surrender and submission, and the best servitor of the Lord. So we're all in the line. We're all in the line of Radharani and Mahaprabhu. So to see any devotee means to see God. Association with devotees means association with the Lord. There's some commentary here in this verse. My rod of chastisement here. This iron rod. Hold the book down. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has a very nice way. It's so wonderful because he's translated all these verses into Bengali, and at the same time, in the translation of the verse, he presents the points. He presents the points as a Gaudiya sees them, as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, Rasika, Mahajan will see these various verses from Padma Puran and other places, and then he sees the verses from a certain angle of vision, then he translates them into Bengali. So in the course of his translation, he captures the essence of the verse from the viewpoint of Gaudiya Siddhanta, and at the same time he even throws in a comment or two, just by one word. So in this verse, he says, Saru Sange Haya Krishna Kata Rasayana Tahe Shadarati Bhakti Krame Udivan. So see, the elixir of Hari Kata, he says, Krishna Kata Rasayana. It's a Rasayan, it's a light giver of life, an ambrosia. The elixir of Hari Kata can be found in the company of Vaishnavas. From it, one gradually gets faith, then affection, then pure devotion. Udipana, these rise one after the other. So this is what he's telling there. Very nice. Krishna Gita is a Rasayana. Those verses in the called Bhakti Rasayana, I believe it's in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. In the second part, the last verses, so many verses, about 61 verses at the end of the book, taken from mostly the 10th canto. There's 4 verses from Brahma Samhita, and the balance of verses are taken from 10th canto, and a couple from 11th canto. And this section of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is called the Bhakti Rasayana. And everyone's seen, I think, in the last, there's so many. And all these verses are describing different aspects of some of those verses describe Sakya Ras in the 10th canto. Some verses describe Madhuri Ras. Some are describing Vatsali Ras. And they all, by reading those verses and chanting and trying to mix one's heart with the meaning of those verses and mix one's heart and mind with the personalities and associates and devotees that are described in those verses, it produces that mixing and that submission and that bhajan according to those mantras, mantra upasana, produces in the heart, after some time, it produces a rasayana, a particular type of rasayana. Rasayana in Ayurveda is a medicine which is based on mercury. Mercury is such a powerful chemical that if you take practically one drop on your tongue, it will kill you. If you take one drop of mercury, put it on your tongue, it will dissolve into your saliva and go into your bloodstream and kill you. It's so poisonous. But in Ayurveda, they take that mercury and then they heat it and somehow they capture it, and in a very minute portion, 1/1000th of a drop or something, and they use that as a anupam, or a vehicle to carry other herbs. And then they give that to a patient. And even if a person is about to die, there's Makar Dwaj. They were administering Makar Dwaj to Srila Prabhupada at the end of his life. It's one of the Rasayana medicines. And even a person is practically dead, if you give them the right Rasayana medicine, they'll come back to life. So this is why these verses are called Bhakti Rasayana. Our bhakti may be practically dead. Our bhakti may be dead, or we may be dying. But if we read these verses, then this will produce bhakti rasayana. Just like if you have milk in a churning pot, and you start churning it. After some time, you will get a lump of butter will form there from the milk. What was liquid will become solid. And what was somewhat tasty will become very tasty. And what was somewhat nourishing will become very nourishing. So this, because milk turned into butter, it's quite a transformation. So when our heart churns, when we churn our heart, we can say our heart is like the milk, and the churning rod is the shlokas of Bhakti Rasayana. So when we churn these shlokas in our heart, then our heart will become like makkhana and misri, become very sweet. And very nourishing. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that Hari Katha is like Rasayana Katha, because that's what the Bhagavatam is saying. Ritkarna Rasayana. It's a Rasayana for the heart and the ear. Not exactly for the body, like Ayurveda, but for the heart, the heart of devotion, or the ear of the devotee. It's a great nectar to hear the Hari Katha. And the second, and the 37th verse, it's also on the category of Sarasanga, which is indicated by Nam Nam Akali Bahuda Nisha Sarva Shakti. And in this verse, again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is quoting Upadeshamrita. He's explaining how to deal with different devotees. Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chetpranat Pranativishcha bhajantam isham sushushaya bhajana vigyamanam yamanya nindari shunya vridam ipshita sangha labhya. This is verse number 5. It describes the three different types of devotees: Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam. This is the Kanishta. That person who utters Krishna's name by just once calling out, O Krishna, is a Kanishta Adhikari. One should offer him respects mentally within the mind. Oh, he's chanting Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. That's very good. Offer respects. We often see the children on the street when we go down the street. Hari Bol, Hari Bol. They haven't taken, of course they're born in Radhika, but they haven't taken Vaishnava Diksha, at least in this formally, in this life. But they say Hari Bol. So I don't know if we can use them in this analogy. Kanishta Adhikaris, because immediately when I said that, I got like a beeper went off in my brain. You know, beep. And I remembered Prabhupada when he was asked about the Brijavasis. There's several things he would say about them. The disciple said, Prabhupada, it doesn't seem that Brijavasis have a guru. Do they need a guru? And Prabhupada said, no, they have a guru. And then the disciples said, well, Prabhupada, I don't see they're initiated. They said, no, Krishna is their guru. Say, Krishna is their guru. And if they simply follow, then everything will be perfect. But the problem is they're not following Krishna. But Krishna directly is their guru. Then another time he said, in one purport, in one place in his books, he says that the residents of Vrindavan, this home of Vrindavan today, right now, he said they are on the platform of Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotion. So don't try to understand them. 1 minute they're taking bong and smoking this and that. The next minute they're chanting Gopal Sahasranam, Radha Sahasranam, Vishnu Sahasranam, Hanuman Chalisa, by heart. They know like thousand shlokas. And if you just get them to start talking about Radha and Krishna and ignite that fire in their heart, they'll keep going forever, if you know Hindi. But if you don't bring up the topic, they'll be busy watching cricket and chewing pan and, you know, seemingly unmundane activities. So you can't understand it. Inside that clay pot, there's a brilliant fire is burning. We only perceive the clay pot. But if you lift the lid up and say, oh, look, there's a ghee lamp there, and it's Akanda Deep is always burning there. So their bhakti for Radha and Krishna is like Akanda Deep. It's Gupta, it's hidden in their heart. And time to time it comes out. We go to Loy Bazaar and we haggle with the cloth wallahs over the price of saris and dhotis and get in different kinds of arguments and things. And we think these guys they're just Agarwals and all they care about is money and this and that. And we have all kinds of bad feelings and this and that. Then by chance, next day we happen to get inspired to go to Mangalartik at Radha Damodar. So we go to Mangalartik and we say, hey, wait a minute, there's the Klothwala. That's the guy I was fighting with yesterday. And telling him he was at Maya and this and that, and he's a jerk and he's not a devotee and he doesn't wear neck beads and this and that. Well, they all wear neck beads usually. But now I see he's standing in front of Radha Damodar and tears are coming down his face. And he's chanting, and he's offering prayers, just spontaneously looking at them without, any distraction for a half hour, offering prayers. He's doing prakrama and offering flowers and doing different pujas. And then you think, oh boy, I made a really big offense yesterday in the cloth shop. So the Vrijavasis, they're very mysterious people. And, they're the chosen ones, so to speak. And we have to be very careful. We should follow Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Jagannanda Pandit. Jagannanda Pandit wanted so much to go to Vrindavan. He repeated relentlessly, asked Lord Chaitanya and Puri, let me go, let me go, let me go, like a child clamoring for a toy. And Lord Chaitanya kept saying, no, no, no. But Jagannanda, he's Bhamya, he's Satyabhama. So very persistent, very feisty and fiery also. Offered Gauranga a big pot of oil, and Gauranga said, I can't take this, offer to Jagannath for the ghee lamps, for Deepavali. He said, for hell with Jagannath, I want, you're my Jagannath. Throws the pot of oil on the ground and stammers off into his kutir and locks himself up for 3 days, won't eat or talk or drink or anything. Heavy man. So then Gauranga has to break his man, saying he's hungry and sick and wants some cooking, some of his wife's cooking. Oh, tell my wife she has to cook for me. Right, Satyabhama, Jagannanda Pandit. So he kept insisting to go, and then finally Lord Chaitanya, all right, go to Vrindavan, but come right back. Go for a couple days, and when you go there, don't just wander here and there and Loy Bazaar and go to, you know, Fogel Ashram, MVT, all this thing. He said, you go, and as soon as you go there, immediately go to Sanatana Goswami. He's your senior, and he's living there in the pure bhajan. You stay with him, and any Vrijavasis you see, you keep a good distance from the Vrijavasis, and you offer respect to everyone, high and low. The panchayat, or the brahmins, or the pundits, or the pandas, or the rickshawalas, or the malis, or sabjiwalas, anyone, you keep a distance and offer respect, and don't mix up very tightly with the Vrijavasis, and then you come right back. So that's what he did. So that instruction of Jagannanda Pandit is also relevant, although sometimes we stay a little longer. But at least in regard to the Vrijavasis, it's very delicate mixing up with them. So each devotee has to figure that out, what that means for them. Now the Madhyamadikari is described here. That person who fully understands the principle of Diksha and has accepted Diksha from a qualified guru and performs bhajan of Bhagavan in accordance with Vaishnav conventions is a Madhyam Adhikari. One should respect such a devotee who is endowed with the correct understanding of reality and illusion by offering obeisances unto him and so forth. Oh, excuse me, that was the end of Madhyamadikari. Now, this is a description of Uttamadikari. One should respect such a devotee, in other words, Uttamadikari, who is endowed with the correct understanding of reality and illusion, by offering obeisances unto him and so forth. The Uttamadikari properly understands the science of bhajan, as described in Bhagavatam and other Vaishnava scriptures, and he performs exclusive bhajan of Krishna. He is a Mahabhagavan. Due to his undeviating absorption in Krishna, the pure heart of such a devotee is free from faults, such as the tendency to criticize others. He is expert in bhajan, which means he's skilled in the method of remembering Radha and Krishna's eternal eightfold daily pastimes through Manasi Seva. Knowing him to be a Mahabhagavat, whose heart is established in the particular mood of service to Radha and Krishna, for which one aspires. So this is the meaning of Swajatiya. This Mahabhagavat, this Uttamadikari, he, in his heart, that's called a Staiba, is established, his heart is established in a particular mode of service to Radha and Krishna, for which we aspire. And he is affectionately disposed towards me, Susnigdha. One should seek his association, considering it to be topmost. One should honor him by offering prostrated obeisances, making relevant inquiry, and rendering service unto him with great love. So, this Jiva Goswami gives a tika that on this point, on this verse.
Because Rupa Goswami asked Jiva Goswami to write commentaries on his various works. So he did that. He wrote a commentary on Nectar Devotion and many other works of Rupa Goswami.
So in this verse 5, he says, if you place a red flower before a crystal, the crystal will turn red. The same thing happens when we keep company with other people. Their qualities, their good qualities and their flaws, or their flaws means their bad qualities, their qualities or flaws and flaws are transmitted to us. We should only keep company with people who have the kind of qualities we want to develop. The word in this verse, he's just citing a word. He says the word swayutani means sajati, sajatiya, having the same aspirations in relation to loving Krishna. So that's the Madhyam Bhagavat. Because we said we should associate with those that are more advanced than ourselves. So the Madhyam, if we're beginning, the Madhyam, of course, is more advanced. So he has, this is Sajati, he has the same aspiration in relation to loving Krishna, which we've already discussed. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we want to read his version of this verse. Aikatave Krishnanam Jaramuke Sun Manate Adaratare Karapunapun Bhakti Sampradaya Lagi Jay Krishna Bhaje Adara Karahapari Tara Para Raje Suyapara Burishanya Ananya Bhajan Janhara Tanhara Seva Kara Anakshan. He says, If we hear someone sincerely chanting the holy name, we should offer respects in the mind, again and again. He says, Puna Puna. Manate Adar. Adar means regard, respect. Then he says, if he has joined a devotional line and he's engaged in working for Krishna or worshipping Krishna, we should respectfully fall down to take the dust of his feet. Bhakti Sampradaya Lavi Jay Krishna Bhaje Adar Kara Padi Tara Pada Raje. We should take the raj from his feet. If we meet a devotee who has no concept, if we meet a devotee who has no concept of anyone belonging to his or to an opposing group, and he is engaged in undeviating devotion to Krishna, then serve him constantly. Very interesting. This is his definition, Uttamadhikari. He has no conception of anyone belonging to his or to an opposing group. He's always engaged in undeviating devotion. That's Ananya Bhakti. Sriya Para Bhuri Shunya. So there's another verse in this regard. This will be the last verse in this Sadhusanga. This is verse 42. And here he's telling not only about associating with the devotees, which, you know, one-on-one basis, and the devotees we're living with, but then he's also saying that Sadhusanga includes the Mahajans. Follow the Mahajans. With great effort, this is text 42 of Bhajan Rahasyam in Dvitiya Yam Sarana. With great effort, one should follow the path delineated by the Mahajans. And he quotes a verse from Skanda Puran. Samrigya Shreya Samhetu Pantak Santapavarjitaham Anavakta Shramam Bhure Yena Santak Pratashtire. And translation, only by following the path which previous great personalities, Mahajans, have easily traversed can we find ultimate auspiciousness and freedom from all suffering. And then, now, is there any questions on these few points? Anything? It's a pretty basic kind of review type thing.
Now this verse
is talking about sarasanga, so it also talks about bhajana kriya. Na namakari bhagda. Bhajana kriya means the practice of the different forms of devotion. This is the general meaning of bhajana kriya. So we want to come to the platform of always doing bhajan. So how do we do constant bhajan? So there's some explanation here. The first thing is we should give up all worldly desires and completely realize and follow the first three instructions of nectar of devotion. In other words, you want to do constant bhajan means ananya bhajan, or akanda bhajan means unbroken. Not some bhajan and deviation or distraction. This is called vikshepa. We're chanting and then we lose interest and we want to do something else. Our mind becomes restless or we become disturbed and we want some change. We want to indulge in some mayic activities or go away from Krishna. It can be like this until we come to the level of constant bhajan. So one acharya is explaining that we should completely realize and follow the first three instructions of nectar devotion. Well, the first one, of course, is quite... Once someone said, what are you doing over here in Radhakund? I said, I'm trying to realize the first instruction of nectar devotion. Because the later instructions are one should live on the banks of Radhakund in his siddhadeya and render devotional service to Radha and Krishna throughout the day and the night. Astikalya, seva. So how does one get to that point of living on the banks of Radhakund in a siddhadeya? Well, Rupa Goswami gives the step-by-step process. And the first one is vacha vegam manasa kota vegam, controlling the tongue and mind and all the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses. Sometimes people pass this verse off and they say, oh, this is shishyat prativim chat. So this means that this is a verse for gurus. If you want to be a guru. But the word guru means master. So actually the verse is applying to each individual Gaudiya Vaishnava. Each Gaudiya Vaishnava is supposed to become a master of the city, of the city of the body. The city has nine gates, nine doors, and so many functions going on. So this instruction is for everyone. And one acharya even explained, this instruction is specifically targeted towards the grihastha section of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Very interesting. He said that the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they're already supposed to be controlling their mind. I mean, for example, sometimes people argue, well, how do you know that Arjuna was a vegetarian? It doesn't say anywhere in Bhagavad Gita that he was a vegetarian. They asked Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's response was, he said, that's already understood. Because he was a member of the Aryan race, and it's already understood that he's a vegetarian, so there's no need to say, for Krishna, because someone will argue, I don't see anywhere in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, be a vegetarian. So when you say Bhagavad Gita is your authority, and then Prabhupada replies, that it's already understood that any actual human being, who's not an animal, he's not a dvipadapashu, two-legged animal, he's actually manush, or human being, descendant of Manu, then he automatically is a vegetarian. This is a birthright. And so in the same way, it's not necessary for Rupa Goswami to address the sannyasis and brahmacharis about vacha vegam manasa kota vegam, because it's already understood that they're doing that. So one acharya, I've heard that this verse, specifically when Rupa Goswami is writing this verse, he was intending to correct and remind the grihastha class of Gaudiya Vaishnavas to quote-unquote get it together. Because grihasthas, they do so much business and their family and relatives and so many social functions, so the tendency is that their tongues are completely out of control. Always talking gramikata and business and family and kiddies and school and hospital and this and that. So in one sense it makes some sense. And that, needless to say, that whether we're brahmachari or sannyasi or whatever, grihastha, Vaishnava or Vaishnavi, we must go in a stepwise way, following the nectar of instruction, to get to the nectar, we have to follow the instructions. The nectar is Radha Kund and Shyama Kund, that's the nectar. To live there eternally in a nectarine body and engage in a nectarine service of the nectarine lords, Radha and Krishna. We have to have nectarine thoughts and nectarine behavior and nectarine words. But now we speak so much poison, our speech is so much poison, it's not amrit. And our actions are so much poison, and our thinking is so much poison, and our dreaming is so much poison. So therefore, we have vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam. We have to control our speech, the pushings of the speech and mind. Some people think it's easy. Well, what's all this nectar instruction? We don't need that. We just get Siddha Pranali and we sit on the banks of Radha Krishna and we're there. We're serving Radha Krishna in a spiritual body. This Rupa Goswami, who is this anyway? We don't need him. We have Siddha Pranali. It's possible. Maybe. In some rare cases it can be, because they already had this level of attainment. They already had Vajravegam, Manasakrodhavegam in their last life. But it's quite clear to see, if you look at most people, there's... I hardly see much Vajravegam, Manasakrodhavegam that the people are controlling. Moreover, generally they're controlled by these things, like the rest of us. So we should be a little sober-minded and try to really genuinely follow the footsteps of Rupa and Raghunath. Rupa Goswami, he wrote Vidagdha Madhav, and he wrote Dan Keli Komodi, and he wrote so many rustic, wonderful things. But he also wrote Upadeshamrita. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he also wrote Stavavali, and so many outpourings from his heart, as we mentioned, Vilakusamanjali. But he also wrote Mana Shiksha. So these are not to be disregarded. This is a step. Go step by step, follow Rupa and Raghunath. But people are impatient, extremely impatient. That's why Rupa Goswami says, be patient. That's one of the first things he says in Nectar Instruction. Hey, wait a minute, you're impatient. He's telling people 500 years ago, you're very impatient. You want Siddha Pranali like this, give me it. Hey, come on, I saw it on internet, I want to download it. You know, I want to download my Siddha Pranali. I don't want to come to Radha Kund, just give me on the internet. So that'll be coming also. Siddha Pranali by email. It's not so easy. It's not so cheap. It's desirable. We want that. And we're begging and praying and hoping that we'll become qualified, that Krishna will direct us at the right time to receive such a wonderful gift. But let's be deserving. So everything has become cheap. And it free access, information technology. Right? The technology has made information available at your fingertips. You can download Radha Kund and get a Radha Kund virtual reality program. And you download on your computer and you can be in Russia and think that you're actually in Radha Kund, you know, virtual reality, right? It seems like you're bathing in the water and it seems like you're really there. And it's not, so... So this Bhajana Kriya, we have to completely realize and follow the first three instructions of Nectar Devotion. Follow Raghunath Das Goswami's Mana Shiksha from beginning to end. We should become a Kinchan Vaishnava. What is a Kinchan? A Kinchan means one who considers he has nothing but Krishna. We should become devoid of the spirit of material enjoyment. It's an interesting point. In other words, until we give up this body, there will be a certain amount of enjoyment by indulging in the objects of the senses. They produce enjoyment. That's the nature of the indriya and the vastu. When they combine together, it produces some so-called sense pleasure. It's called indriya sukha. But we should not revel in that, or we should not... and say, wallow in that pleasure. Rather, we should say, okay, this pleasure is coming, but the spirit, it's a very, very interesting point. We should be devoid of the spirit of material enjoyment. I really don't want to enjoy anything. The enjoyment's coming to me. By taking this nice prasadam, I'm enjoying. I like it. It's tasty. Sunday feast. But it's that spirit, that mood of, I am the enjoyer, I want to enjoy it. As opposed to, I'm accepting this as a gift of Krishna. Krishna has given this mercy. And in this mercy, there is so much pleasure coming to me. So I'm grateful to Krishna. But I don't want to be an enjoying agent. I want to annihilate this enjoying spirit from me. Not the principle of enjoying, but the enjoying spirit. The desire to be the enjoyer. I want to enjoy. I want tasty foods. No, I don't want tasty foods. I want Krishna prasad. If I get dali every day for 1,000 lifetimes, it's fine. As long as Krishna ate it first. And I'll taste so much nectar. And Krishna gives me chapan bhog for 1,000 lifetimes. Oh, I accept it. Equally. Not like, all right. Chapan bhog, and completely dive into it, and then, oh, this is good, and that's good. And then lose all connection with Krishna, because indulging in the enjoying spirit. This qualifying word is very important. Be devoid of the spirit of material enjoyment, and accept only the bare necessities for his maintenance. We can perform Astakaliya Bhajan when all kinds of desires, offenses, and anarthas are removed. Now here there's several verses where Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses Bhajana Kriya. If you want to list them for you, those that are taking notes. I don't know if we'll discuss all of them. They're all good, but I have to think how slow we want to go. We can't discuss all of them, but we'll write them down first of all. Text 14, text 15, text 17, 23 through 25. If you want to just take a note for
what were these again, sorry?
These are Bhajan Rahasyam verses that describe the principle of Bhajana Kriya. Ado Shara Tata Sarva Sangha Bhajana Kriya Anartha Nirvati Tata Nishta Tito Ruchi Sakti Bhava Prema. These are reference verses, if you want to make a list. Because I have kind of organized. My notes, it says levels of bhakti. And the first level was sarvasanga, and so much discussion. Levels of bhakti, number two, bhajana kriya, definition, like that. And note taking. Text 14, 15, 17, 23 through 25, 28 through 30, 35, 38, 39, 40, and 44. So we'll look at text 14. See what secret instruction we will receive. This is Rahasya. The book is called Bhajan Rahasya. Rahasya means something very confidential, something very secret, something very private, something very important, something very valuable, something very individual, something very personal. So we have to see in each one of these verses, each one of these reference verses, that there's all that this Rahasya is there. And often it seems like that. When we read it, we say, yes, it's very secret to me. I don't understand how this verse is related to Bhajana Kriya, or how this verse is related to Sarvasanga, or how this verse is related to doing bhajan and non-bhajan. Because there are only 250 secrets or so in this book. So these are the most secret of all secrets, as Krishna says in Gita, the Rahasya. Rahasyagyan, most secret of all secrets. Raja Vidya, Raja Guyam, Pavitram, Raja Guyam. Guyam means secret, secret knowledge. Text 14. This is about Bhajan Kriya. It says this verse is titled The Signs of Bhakti, the signs, indications of Bhakti Yoga. The characteristics of Bhakti Yoga are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 2, Verse 7 and 12. This is the verse. Tachchadadhana muniyo Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya Pashyant Yatmani Chatmanam Bhaktya Shuta Grihitaya Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashivairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahoitakam. A faithful person, after hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, automatically acquires bhakti endowed with knowledge and renunciation. So we hear Bhagavatam, then Bhakti Devi comes in our heart. When Bhakti Devi comes, and she brings knowledge, and when we attain transcendental knowledge, then we become detached from Maya and material activities. By such bhakti, he realizes Bhagavan's sarup in his heart, and he realizes his relationship with him. Thus, he obtains service of the Lord. When the relationship between the Lord and the living entity is established, Bhakti Yoga for Bhagavan Vasudeva appears. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, yes, Bengali verse. Shadakari nama bhaje sadhu kripa pan itare viraga nitya sarupa bhujiya.
Yake bali bhakti yoga anatam bhakti yoga sarvasiddhi
jaridare kram. Translation. One who attains the mercy of a sadhu and engages faithfully in the worship of the holy name becomes indifferent to other things, and he realizes his eternal identity. This is called bhakti yoga in its highest form. In other words, to realize your sarup, obviously, is culmination of the practice of bhakti. One can attain all perfection if one follows the process in proper sequence. Bhakti yogi sarva siddhi jari dhare kram. Dhare kram, one holds on to the proper sequence. Bhakti yoga sarva siddhi. He can attain all perfection in bhakti yoga. In my notes in the book here, which I didn't look at first, it says here, read Srila Prabhupada's Tika from the one volume Bhagavatam, verse 15. So if I can step out for a minute, I'll get the one volume Bhagavatam. In other words, I'm not prepared. So maybe you can stretch for 1 minute and I'll get the one volume Bhagavatam.
Because Prabhupada's words are pretty compelling.
Govinda Gokal Shigaru Vina Priya Priyatam Shishama Sham Kishore Kishore Rada Murlida Radhika Hari Rada Damoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada's, some excerpts from Prabhupada's purport to this first verse, which is quoted here, first canto, chapter 2, verse 12, which is the first entry in text 14 by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Tach chada dana munayo. Prabhupada says that devotional service which is based on the foreground of full knowledge, combined with detachment from material association, and which is fixed by the oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the absolute truth. So here we say we are practicing bhakti, so it should be based on full knowledge. And that knowledge should be combined with detachment. So we need knowledge, full knowledge, detachment from material association. And that bhakti must be fixed. How do we become fixed in nishchan bhakti? By always hearing the Vedas. This is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the absolute truth. Then the other page. This is number 12. Yeah.
Yeah, this is 6.
The other one is 7. This is still verse 12. A sincere devotee must be prepared to hear the Vedic literature, like the Upanishads. Well, I mentioned this actually when I gave a class to glorify Kushakrata. Because I was speaking in that class in Vrindavan Temple a few weeks ago. But it appears to me that Kushakrata read this purport sometime in late 79 when he started his Krishna Institute single-handedly. He read this line and then decided, yes, I'm going to make all these books that Prabhupada's talking about available. So this is what Prabhupada says. A sincere devotee must, therefore, this is the conclusion of his purport, be prepared to hear the Vedic literature, like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis, for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service becomes worthless, and therefore a sort of disturbance in the path of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra authorities, the make-show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An unauthorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literatures, one can see the all-pervading localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constantly. This is called samadhi. So this is another way of describing granta samadhi. The grantas are buried in the ground, and when the grantas are buried in the ground of our heart, and we live accordingly, and we live accordingly according to the grantas or the sacred scriptures, then we will be in constant darshan. Called Atma Darshan, we'll be constantly having darshan of the super soul within ourselves. So this is Vedic Prabhupada's emphasizing here. This is an aspect of Bhajana Kriya. This is the basis, the foundation of the Vedic literature. And so this purport, it's very nice. The process of bhakti is to hear Krishna Katha from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master. Knowledge endowed with a sense of one's relationship with Krishna appears through the process of bhakti by the means of hearing and chanting. That's a good sentence. Knowledge endowed with a sense of one's relationship. That's called sambandha jnana. Knowledge endowed with a sense of one's relationship with Krishna appears through the process of bhakti by the means of hearing and chanting. The acharyas have ascertained that the mood of service appears by hearing from authorities. So the more we hear the Vedic literatures, the more the seva bhav comes. Mood of seva means seva bhav. Because the acharyas in all their writings of past and present, the activities of the and speaking of the present acharyas and the writings of the past acharyas are full of seva bhava. So when we associate with them or read their teachings, then that will come into us. This mood of service appears. This is what the acharyas are saying. You want? Oh, I don't want to serve Krishna. I don't have any desire to serve Krishna. That seva bhava is the basis of all progress in bhakti. If someone immediately, say, without having a strong foundation, seva bhava, if someone is given initiation into their sarup, they'll fail, because the basis of the whole entirety of Manjari, you can say Manjari Sarup Bhajan, is all seva. They're just moment to moment rendering service in different sevas. And so unless if one still has strong enjoying spirit, it's very difficult to maintain a position like that. So that's why the acharyas are saying we should have constant hearing and chanting in a regulated way, and this will bring about a strong mood, very strong mood of seva, or service mood, in our hearts. And you even observe that in some people. You see some people have a natural inclination to serve. Some people just stand around. They're standing around, they eat some prasadam, or they're waiting for prasadam. And they don't actually have a seva bhav. They're actually enjoyers. There's too much enjoying spirit. So they're just sitting there, well, one's prasadam, and they're not really chanting, they're only thinking about what they're going to eat or something. Whereas someone else, he's waiting for prasadam, he just sits down and either absorbs himself in nam, or meditating on some lila happening at that time. Or someone else who maybe he's looking, oh, look, this I can straighten up this, or I can help serve, I can help with the plates. And there's somebody delegated or appointed to serve out the plates, but he thinks, well, I'm just sitting here, let me get up and help. But someone else says, yeah, well, he's doing it, why should I do anything? But there's he's one man serving out the plates, and there's 300 people waiting to take prasadam. It'll take him 10 minutes. But if five people jump up, because I take out these brikamas in the March, you know, the Mayapur festival time, and I see the tendency, everyone gets somewhere to sit down for breakfast, and 400 people sit down, and there's a couple of servers. I say, would anyone like to get prema bhakti here? And everybody says, yes, yes. I say, okay, and starts helping the servers, and everyone jumps up. And, you know, like, otherwise, they're just sitting, okay, where's the breakfast? You know? Serve me, serve me, serve me, serve me, serve me. This is the general tendency. But seva bhava means, I want to serve you. I want to which means Radha and Krishna and all their parts and parcels. The impersonalists do not follow this path of hearing, which is a descending path, which is called Avaroha Panta. Rather, impersonalists endeavor to take shelter of the doctrine of the ascending path. Their attempts are compared to trying to reach the sky by climbing on falling raindrops. It's a very nice analogy. The sky, in other words, they want to reach the spiritual sky. They want to, you know, want to climb through the sky to get to the Brahman by their own endeavor. It's called Aroha Panta, the ascending method. Sometimes I make a joke and I say, this is the method of trying to send your ass upwards. The ascending path. Ascending and descending. So that's Aroha Panta. Aroha Panta means ascending. And the Avaroha, like avatar, is descending path. So we study in a submissive mood. We hear and we study and we pray and we chant for the mercy to descend. As Mother Yashoda did, she tried so much and then the mercy finally descended. And then she was able to capture Krishna. The impersonalists say, I will do it, I will conquer Brahman, I will realize Brahman by climbing reach the sky by climbing on falling raindrops. That's a very good thing. Now it's 6:15, so this is the foundation, the whole foundation of any activity is hearing. We can't engage in any activity without hearing, so to do sadhana bhakti, or bhakti, or bhajana kriya, which means the nine limbs of devotion, we have to hear, 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 and hear again. Because what happens is, by association with Maya, whatever we hear today, we forget tomorrow. We hear so many good things, but if we allow any Maya to come in between the time we hear and the time we hear again, the Maya says, oh, you didn't hear anything. Did you hear anything yesterday? About Krishna, about surrender, about service, about meditation? No, I don't think so. And you can do a test. 1 hour after Bhagavatam class, everyone's sitting there. Did you go to Bhagavatam class? Yes. Did you sleep? No, I was wide awake. Okay, can you tell me about Bhagavatam class? Yeah, there was a class. There was some sannyasi gave a class. And it was a good class. He told some joke about his car broke down. His car broke down once in Turkey, and these ghosts came and shook his car back and forth, or something, in Romania or somewhere like that. Acha? Anything else? No, I can't remember anything else. So how is it? We forgot. We heard 1 hour class, and then 1 hour later, then we forgot 99% of it. So this is the effect of Maya. Because our brain is so much distraction, so much sense impulses coming. As soon as we're hearing a class and we're really hearing it, as soon as we come out of class, it's boom, boom, bum, bum. So many forms, so many rupam and forms and tastes and smells and thoughts. Prasadam, and what's for prasadam? Oh, I had that yesterday, I'm going to make this today, I have to go to the market, I have to buy this, that. And then who's that? Oh, she's nice and he's nice and this, that. And oh, that, she has nice clothes and I don't have nice clothes. And he has a nice dhoti and I don't have a nice dhoti. He has a fancy watch, and I don't know what. No, all these thoughts, it's Maya. Then they take away whatever you heard for that 1 hour, and they just broadcast it into the sky like feeding birds with a handful of bird feed. Throw it like that. And all that beautiful masterpiece of that symphony of philosophy that we heard in the Bhagavatam class becomes scattered to the wind. And then, so that's where you go, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So eventually, day after day, sometimes. In the old days, when we first joined, we used to have this contest that they would chant the verse, and everyone would have to memorize the verse each day, the Bhagavatam verse. Then during prasadam, or you're in the kitchen, okay, for what was the verse? Bhagavatam verse. Well, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Pariyojita. We would test each other. At least we knew the verse. It was really nice. There was so much emphasis in on the Bhagavatam, because that was the main class every day. The text 15, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling this is, he's quoting the Chatushloki, one of the nutshell verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 9, verse 36. And this is about Bhajan Kriya, because this verse and the points established in this verse, this verse creates a favorable circumstance for doing bhakti.
So, this is what Bhajan Kriya is all about. So we want to make a very favorable circumstance. So this is the verse. Itava eva jignasyam tatva jignas sanatana anvaya yativekavyam yatsyat savatrasavada.
The translation, one who is inquisitive about the truth of the self, atma-tattva, inquires through direct, anvaya, and indirect, vyatireka, means of deliberation about that subject, which is always eternal. Srila Prabhupada translated like this, a person searching
after the absolute truth
must search for it up to this point, by both the direct and indirect methods, so that his understanding will be firm and fixed in all time and all space. Very nice translation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, anartha nashara jatna duita prakar anvaya mokete vyati reka mokeyar anvaya mokete viri bhajana vishay vyati reka mukete nished nanashray.
Destruction of anarthas takes place in two ways, the direct and indirect methods. The direct method is to engage in positive acts of devotion. The indirect method is to stop taking refuge in anyone or anything other than Krishna or devotion to Him.
Stop taking refuge in anything other than Krishna or devotion to Him.
Why is that called indirect?
He's saying, in other words,
directly, positively, we engage in limbs of devotion, right? Hearing and chanting. that the same, indirectly, it's like what to do and what not to do. We do this, and when we don't do, we be careful not to slip into sense gratification. That's what he's saying. This is indirect, because this is helpful. If on one side we're doing the positive or the direct means, which is what he says is engaging devotional service, but time to time we slide from devotional service and we get into an eating binge, we overeat out of some anxiety or some frustration, and then we don't, so that deviation of overeating is not coming under the category of direct devotional service. We've become deviated, so that will water down or dilute our practices. So he says indirectly, indirectly we should not take refuge in anyone or anything, because sometimes devotees have difficulty, so they go to some psychologist, or they, especially in America for some years, there are many Prabhupada disciples who are going to some psychologists who are Christians and kind of getting them diverted from bhakti, because they had some mental problems or emotional problems, so they went to this psychologist. This is in the 80s, after Prabhupada's disappearance. It was quite a big phenomenon in America with many senior devotees. And then the psychologist said, describe your activities. And I said, we get up and we chant Hare Krishna and go to Brahma, Brahmaharta. Then he said, oh, this is the cause of why you're going a little crazy. You're doing too much of this bhakti. You should relax. Go out in the country, go for a picnic, go bowling, go surfing and relax. And so then, was encouraging them and to deviate from direct practices. So from what I can understand, he says, Anya Mukhete Vidi Bhajana Adishai Yati Vidi Mukhete Nishay Nanashai. So we should never, even indirectly, we should not take shelter of anything other than Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Some people, they take, this is the indirect, he said this is indirect. Indirect method is to stop taking refuge in anything or anyone or anything other than Krishna or devotion to Him. Because the verse is telling that. He inquires directly or indirectly. That's what the verse is telling. The same word, vyatireka. So Bhaktivinoda takes this indirect in this way. So what the Bhagavatam verse is saying is that no matter how we search for the Lord, either directly or indirectly, in whatever way we, in the material world, in the spiritual world, we should try to find the essence of everything. In spiritual pursuits, the essence of everything is Krishna, and in the material world, in any activities that we engage in, we must also find Krishna there. That's indirect and indirect, as the Bhagavatam is saying. But then Bhaktivinoda is saying, he's kind of saying, we shouldn't take shelter. We shouldn't seek shelter, take shelter in anything but Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That's his meaning of, that's his idea of the indirect. Yeah, it's just like it. Accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable. And one acharya says the direct method refers to Raganuga Bhakti, and the indirect refers to Vaidhi Bhakti. Direct method means to just be attached to Krishna, be absorbed in serving Him with attachment. And indirect means that directly means you're attached to Krishna in a particular loving mood and you're serving Him in that mood and absorbed and hearing and chanting. And indirect is we don't have a direct connection and an awakened relationship with Krishna in one of the bhavas, one of the sthayi bhavas. So therefore the indirect method is to follow this rule and that rule and avoid non-devotees and be careful in eating and all this, or follow all these vidhis. This is indirect because this isn't the goal. The goal is to come to the direct method, which is directly link up with Krishna in a loving relationship of service. So until we come to that, we will practice the indirect method, which is Vaidhi Sadhana. Because Vaidhi is supposed to lead to Raganuga Sadhana, then Raganuga Sadhana leads to Bhava Bhakti, then Prem Bhakti. Next, that was verse 15. So, these are, in one sense, you could say these indicate some rules of sadhana. Because in the purport, let's read this purport and maybe it'll help us a little bit. This text 15 is the fourth verse of the Chatushloki Bhagavat, and it describes sadhana bhakti, the means for obtaining the above mentioned supreme goal, which is the prem seva Bhagavan. The word vyati reka is used in regard to avoiding those actions that are unfavorable and that cause obstacles in obtaining the desired goal. The path of sadhana is known as avideya. That instruction which is obtained from the scriptures through direct interpretation is known as avideya. This is described in this text. Sadhana bhakti is none other than avideya. Sadhana bhakti is not dependent on time, place, performer, or circumstance. The duty of all living entities is to perform sadhana bhakti in all places, all times, and under all circumstances. The sadhaka should inquire and hear from the spiritual master about sadhana bhakti. And this text now gets into this, because all these verses, generally we're discussing them and taking them from the viewpoint of the sadhaka, the ajatarati sadhaka. But all of these verses, they also have, they have, an, as I mentioned a few times, the jatarati sadhaka, the devotee is on the level of bhava bhakti, he will read these verses and also relish these verses from a whole different perspective due to the awakening of his bhava and his relationship with Radha and Krishna. So he'll also do nam bhajan, chant the holy name, and he'll also go through this book and read these verses and get so many wonderful meanings from these verses and simultaneously meditate on the Astakali Lila. In this text, the confidential meaning of direct and indirect, you know, these two words, vyatireka, anvaya. Anvaya means direct and vyatireka means indirect. The confidential meaning of direct and indirect indicates the union, samyog, and separation, viparlamba, found in Brajendra Nandan Shamsundar's amorous pastimes, Shringar Ras, with his most beloved Brajasundaris. To deceive the conditioned living entities, all these priceless jewels are kept well protected in a box that the Jnanis and Aishwarya Bhaktis are unable to open. That guru who is adept at relishing the ras of Braja displays its contents only to his qualified disciples. So often it's told by the advanced teachers, devotees, sometimes people challenge, they say, I don't see anywhere in the 10th canto the name of Srimati Radharani, except when one verse Anuradhito in the Rasa Panchadaya. I think it's there. It almost mentions the word Radha. Someone will say that. That will be an Aishwarya Mai Gyan Bhakta. So the Acharya is replying, oh, you don't? Actually, Radharani is in every single verse of the Bhagavatam. In all 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, you can find Radharani. In Prahlad Shiksha, and Prahlad Charita, and Dhruva Charita, and all the different chapters and sections of the Bhagavatam. Because ultimately, everything is, if you take a drop of ocean water, it has all the elements that are in the entire ocean. Right? Salt and whatever else is there. So you take one verse you take one drop or one verse of the ocean of the 18,000 Bhagavatam verses, because the ocean of the Bhagavatam is basically the prema rasa of the Braja Gopis, and specifically the Madanakya Bhava, Mahabhava Radharani. So that the ocean of love is Mahabhava Swarupini, is Srimati Radharani. She's the ocean of love, and the whole intention of the Bhagavatam is to submerge one or plunge one into the ocean of Radharani's love. So therefore, that's the goal, that's the summation or totality of the Bhagavatam, is describing the oceanic heart of Srimati Radharani, which is tossing and turning with waves of Mahabhav. So if you take any one shloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one drop from the ocean of Radharani's heart, you will be able to find Radharani there, the qualities of Radharani. But that takes adhikar, it takes qualification. One must be a jatarati sadhaka. Jatarati, his rati, his bhav for Radharani, he's in Madhura rati. His rati and bhav is awoken for Radha and Krishna. So when he's reading, he's saying, Radharani's here, Radharani's here. But we read and say, one must search it out to indirectly and directly. When we read this verse, then we say, what does this mean? We don't even know what it means even for on the externally. We don't have a clue what it means, unless Prabhupada explains it or Acharyas explain. So this verse, and especially when you consider the purport in relation to the verse, we mentioned in our notes that this mentions some rules of sadhana, because it's referring to Vaidhi sadhana. And text 17, this is also on sadhana bhakti, and this is again familiar territory. And this is bhajan rahasyam. These are the secrets of bhajan, the very, very confidential secrets of bhajan. And we say, wait a minute, I've heard this all before. This is Upadeshamrita. We glossed through it, or raced through it, and thought, oh, I read it once, it's a very nice book, now go on to the nectar. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at the end of his life, he's saying, wait a minute, don't go too fast. Nectar instruction, is lots of things in there. In fact, he wrote an entire book on the first, I believe it was the first three shlokas of nectar instruction. It's called Bhakti Alok. Right? I think it's the first three instructions, which we were mentioning earlier, that to do constant bhajan, we have to completely realize and follow the first three instructions of nectar instruction, Upadeshamrita. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur very much quotes from Upadeshamrita in relation to bhajana kriya, which we're discussing, because this is these are the secrets of bhajan, how to do bhajan properly, the proper attitude, proper practice, proper conception, proper desire, and systematically, and proper sequence, are hidden in the Nam Namakari verse, and those secrets are brought out in the Bhajan Rahasyam. So this verse says there are six thorns on the path of devotion. This is the title that we got from the book that Srimati gave us. Very helpful. I went through that. I finished my whole course preparation. Then you gave me that edition that I went through and added here and there and tried to enhance. So I'm very much thankful for that. It helped me a lot. And hopefully you can go on to, more help others. Bhaktivinoda is explaining this verse. He says, six impediments to bhakti are described in the second verse of Upadeshamrita. Atyahara prayashascha prajalpa niyamagra janasangaschaloyamcha sadbhir bhaktir vinashiti. The following six kinds of faults destroy bhakti: eating too much or collecting more than necessary, endeavoring for that which is opposed to bhakti. And there's another footnote to this. Endeavoring for that which is opposed to bhakti, that is prayashash. And that can also include making great efforts to achieve material ends. 3, engaging in useless mundane talk. And another, gossiping, arguing unnecessarily. It's included there. Gossiping, arguing unnecessarily. And then number 4, failing to adopt essential rules and regulations, or fanatically adhering to rules and regulations. And that can also be described as the tendency to follow rules that don't have direct bearing on devotional advancement. That's a really nice phrase. This is, comes under niyam agraha. Niyam means rule. Agraha means
following blindly, like blindly following rules. Agraha.
Niyam agraha. So it's the tendency to follow rules that don't have a direct bearing on devotional advancement. Number 5, taking bad association. Janasangas. We have satsang and we have janasang. Satsang is associating with those that are eternal, the sadhus, and speak of eternity and point us in the direction of eternity. Satsanga. And janasanga means associating with the living entities of this world, the jana. Jana means people. So they're asat. They're of this world, they're absorbed in this world, they want to stay in this world, and they're attached and they love this world. That's Janasanga. Number 6 is being greedy lolyam, or restless in the mind to adopt worthless opinions. That's a very interesting definition. Being restless in the mind to adopt worthless opinions. And it's also described as being greedy for material things. So these are six thorns on the path of bhakti, so we want to be careful not to step on these thorns. It will hurt our feet, right? Like you're out walking on a parikrama, everyone did parikrama of Govardhan yesterday, either mentally or physically. So maybe you got the good fortune to step on a thorn, or a small sticker, a little pricker, a little dried seed. And then you can be thinking, oh Krishna, when you go out to the forest, tend the cows in a day, your feet must be hurt by the small stickers and thorns on the path. Because we know how tender your feet are. Oh, just thinking of this pains our heart more than you can imagine. So were we praying like that? Were we thinking like that when we stepped on a thorn, thinking of the gopis? Hope so. Let's keep everything positive. So tomorrow we can describe more of these verses on bhajan, bhajana kriya, and try to appreciate, because oftentimes we become familiar. In English they have an expression, familiarity breeds contempt. Contempt, to be contemptuous or have contempt means that you lose your regard for something. You lose your interest, you lose your appreciation, you lose your gratefulness, you become hateful towards that thing. Like husbands and wives after 20 years. You know, familiarity breeds contempt. They become so familiar, they become contemptuous, and they say, why do you always pull your earlobe? You know, they notice everything about, they're so familiar with each other, they notice all the behavior quirks, and after 10, 20 years, they go crazy. Just, why do you always clear your throat before you eat dinner? You always go, and then you eat. Anything like that. They become very contemptuous over small things. You see husbands and wives, they really rip each other apart sometimes. Psychic warfare in the name of love. psychic bombs. It's really pathetic when you drop into some family situations and spend a couple of days, and because when you're a devotee, then your senses and your sensitivities and your perceptions are extremely wide open, and then you're a guest in someone's house for a couple of days traveling or something. And but you can see all these things, and you're just quiet. And you're thinking, they don't even, they're so wrapped up in the modes of nature, they can't even see what they're doing to each other. It's really a tragedy in mundane life. So therefore, having experienced the tragedy of mundane life, the Kripambodhi Vaishnava, he's full of mercy, so he wants to preach, and he wants to realize Krishna and give to others to help them from suffering. So tomorrow we'll start text 23, by the mercy of the Lord. Any quick questions? Or, no.
Maharaj, you're saying there are three things to do, constant bhajan.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure whether you, in regards to that list, you were dealing with.
Yeah, I only spoke number one. One is to give up all worldly desires. One is to give up all worldly desires. I little spaced out my notes. First one is give up all worldly desires. The second is to completely, this is number two, completely realize and follow verse 1-3 of the Nectar of Devotion, and follow Raghunath Das Goswami's Manushiksha from beginning to end. Third, become an Akinchan Vaishnava, one who considers he has nothing but Krishna. He's devoid of the spirit of material enjoyment, and he accepts only the bare necessities of life. So, then that's the three. Then the kind of the conclusion is, when these are in place, or we've attained these three, then we can perform Astakalaya Bhajan, when all kinds of desires, offenses, and anarthas are removed by doing these first three. And then, this is the systematic Bhajan Kram. The first one is to give up all worldly desires. It almost sounds like to be in a kinchin, but it's one thing, one thing to get with material desires, but then the kinshin brings another aspect, is that there's no spirit of material enjoyment. Because we may give up all worldly desires and we're not engaging maybe in material activities, that's what kind of what the first one means. But there still may be some spirit within us to enjoy. Although we've apparently given up the material desires, the worldly desires, but the spirit is still there. But in Kinshana, he is so much, in his very advanced state, he has nothing but Krishna. And he's devoid of the spirit, totally the spirit of material enjoyment, and he accepts only the bare necessities for its maintenance. We may give up all worldly desires, but we still take nice foods, nice prasadam, and that's okay. That means that's within the category of giving up all worldly desires. No, I'll take whatever prasadam. I don't desire, in terms of worldly desires for prasadam, I mean for food, I give up all worldly desires. I live in a temple, I'll accept whatever Krishna sends. So he sends some very nice food in the temple sometimes. But in the kinshin, nice food will come, he'll take the rice and the dal and say, oh, I'll just take this. I'll eat to maintain myself. Even Prabhupada says one purport in the Sisi, that in the temples of ISKCON we should offer very opulent prasadam to the deities. And then all the mahaprasadam should be distributed to the grihasthas. And the brahmacharis and temple devotees should eat very simple prasadam.
He also says in CC that anyone who actually has attachment to Krishna's feet when they're anything with
Prasadam. Excuse me, I didn't hear.
One is anything with Prasadam.
Yeah, that's another one is anything with Prasadam. So many times in Los Angeles, they would cook for Prabhupada, very elaborate, so many cooks in the kitchen, ladies and gents, and bring this big silver tray in with so many things. And Prabhupada would eat the chapati and the rice, and a dal, and a little karela, a little eggplant, a little sabji, and just to make everybody happy, he would put his finger on top of the cake. He would put his fingerprint on the cake icing. He would go, there's some cakes, and he'd go, oh, look, Prabhupada took it, you know, because his fingerprint was there. The indent of his finger was left impressed on the surface of the cake. Oh, look, Prabhupada's mom, Guru Prasad, okay, everybody, let's get the cake. Make this huge cake, 6 feet long, 8 feet wide, and put a piece on Prabhupada's plate, and he would, and every day we saw, because sometimes we got Prabhupada's remnants in LA, they would give it, especially to the Sankirtan devotees, and they would save for us. We were out, and the other devotees were at the temple, they would fight it out and get all the cakes and everything. And then we asked him, so what does Prabhupada eat? And then they would tell us, he eats the same thing all around the world. Everybody cooks, you know, all these big things and he eats the same thing, rice dal. And he didn't like his karela. Prabhupada liked his karela and his eggplant. You know, that pookie, eggplant pookie or something, like black cooked in turmeric and, I don't know, hing or whatever, mustard oil or something. We got that with a bite out of it, probably bit in most of it. So, tomorrow hopefully we meet again.
Once you go with the real sky, I think the single day which you can now have an email, but I got that computer today, maybe you can, if you ever get a chance, get this program.
Okay, but I'll bring them in.
If you have to buy them, then just buy them and I'll pay you. If you don't have them yet. On Kushas, do you have the forbidden ones too? Like within the